You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast right now and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk. As always, man, y'all, I don't know about y'all, man, but I just really been stressing about this weather, man. I don't know where you're at right now, where you're listening from, but Georgia, down here in Georgia, we just cannot figure it out. And if you've been listening to me long enough, I always kind of throw some, comments in about the weather, right? And right now, it's just really crazy right now, y'all. I mean, we had rain. It was pouring down raining this past Sunday. It was cold a little earlier in the week. Then the sun came out. Then it was chilly at night. Then it rained again. Now it's raining again. It's just back and forth, man. I pray to God for some consistency. But you know what? Easter is right around the corner, and it does look like the weather is. I mean, it has been nice. You know, before this past week, it's been nice, so I can't complain too much. But we really did need the rain, just because this pollen has been crazy. And the older I get, y'all, the pollen has started to mess with me a lot more than it has when I was in my 20s. So, it's all good. I'm glad that the pollen is getting washed away. So, I can't tell you how many times I sprayed my car off, went back inside, came back outside to go somewhere, and it's covered right back with pollen again. So, it is what it is. But definitely looking forward to some consistency when it comes to this spring weather. So, pray for that. But I hope y'all have had a great week. I hope, you know, look, if you got some good stuff planned this weekend, excited for you. I know I do. But you know, let's jump in, man. We got a lot of good things to talk about right now that's been going on in the world of sports. We had two national champions crowned with the men and the women's college teams. And then, you know, we have some stuff that's changed around in the NFL, some things that are being discussed that I want to talk about today. And then also, you know, just kind of chime in on what's been going on in the world of hockey. You know, I typically don't cover a lot of that, but I did want to mention some stuff that happened there. And then we're going to talk about a little NBA as well. But let's jump in, man, because you know, we did have, like I said, national champions that were crowned. I'm going to start with the women. We had 2-seed UConn versus 1-seed South Carolina. And, man, this one was really, really, really shocking for me. Not the fact that, you know, UConn won, but the way that UConn absolutely dominated and destroyed South Carolina, 82-59. I mean, this is the program 12th national title for UConn. So, you know, just seeing that South Carolina was just dominating. I don't even think I've ever seen, you know, South Carolina get beat that bad, you know, and it wasn't close. You know, I think it was like the closest that I saw. I mean, at halftime, it was a 10 or 12 point game. I want to say it was a 10 point game at halftime. And I honestly didn't get a chance to watch the game. I saw a little bit of the first and second quarter, but I checked the score later and it was just, I was in shock. I was expecting it to be closer, but like I said, UConn, this is the program's 12th national title. Sarah Strong actually led the way for the Huskies with 24 points and 15 rebounds. Ozzie Fudd, who was, might I add, the most outstanding player of the Final Four, she also had 24 points. Paige Beckers added 17 points, and this was huge for her because we all know, you know, what happened with the torn ACL. So this was really the one thing that was missing from her, you know, college career, was that national title. So, you know, glad to see her be able to come back and have that story. Now, UConn as a team shot 48% from the field, 85% from the free throw line, which is very, very important. got to hit your free throws. They out-rebounded South Carolina 40-36. They had 36 points in the paint, and their largest lead in this game was 32 points. So, honestly, and when you look at the numbers and you look at how UConn played over the course of this season, this game actually aligned with what the Huskies have done all year. I mean, let's really just take a look at this, right? They were number one in the country in field goal percentage at 50%, number one in the country in points allowed per game at 52, and number one in the country in points differential at plus 29.5. So everything that I just listed off right there is what they were able to accomplish in the national championship. That's who they have been all year. So no surprises there in the fact that they were able to do it. It's just the fact that we are not used to seeing a Dawn Staley coached team get dominated like that, right? And, you know, obviously Dawn Staley was looking for a third national title in 4 years, and it would have been the fourth title overall. But UConn, they were just too much, you know. So congratulations to, you know, head coach Gino Ormina and the Huskies on their 12th national title. So yeah, and moving along, man, let's talk about the men's national title game, because this one was a low scoring thriller. Did expect it to be a little more points scored than this, but let's talk about it, right? So the Florida Gators come back from 12 down to steal the national title from the Houston Cougars 65-63. And like I said, a low scoring thriller. Florida gets his third national title, and this is their first one since 2007. And remember, Florida went back to back in 2006 and 2007. That was a dangerous team with Corey Brewer. You had Joakim Noah. You had Al Horford on that team. So they were forced to be reckoned with. Florida has not won a title since then. So this is huge, obviously, for them and their program. Will Richard actually led the way with 18 points for the Gators. Alex Condon was able to come up with 12 points. And Walter Clayton Jr., 18 points in a huge defensive stop by Denai Emmanuel Sharp, a three-point attempt in the final seconds to give the Gators the national championship. And honestly, you look at Florida, before I go any further into the game itself, you look at, you know, Florida over this NCAA tournament, they have been the comeback kids. I mean, it looked like they were down and out in what, three games, right? And they were able to just bounce back, and Walter Clayton Jr. just being that spark, right? To really put the team on his back and you know, help continue to push this team forward, continue to help them to keep grinding and keep fighting and not looking at the scoreboard, but continuing to just play their game, right? And they've been the comeback kids, right? Or the comeback Gators, as I should say. And, you know, looking at the final seconds of this game, I honestly was shocked, right? And I'm not going to lie, I did pick Houston to win. I do like Houston. Not nothing against Florida, but I do like Houston and you know, the way that they play and everything like that. But I'm honestly not sure why Emmanuel Sharp didn't shoot the ball, honestly. I mean, you get the ball coming up off the screen. I know, you know, Walter Clayton Jr. was closing in on his three-point attempt, but you have to understand, these are the final seconds of this game. You don't have time to play around. So him going up and literally dropping the ball, and at that point, you're taken out of the play. You literally cannot do anything from that point, because if you go touch it, it's a travel. So honestly, he honestly would have been better off touching the ball and giving it back to Florida, because at least that would have preserved some time, right? And at least they could have attempted to, you know, they would have obviously fouled him in that situation, and maybe they could have hoped for them, you know, to miss a free throw. Maybe they made a free throw and maybe they missed one. They still have an opportunity to, you know, hoist one up in the final seconds to maybe tie it and send it to overtime. But you just cannot not shoot the ball in that situation. I mean, Worst case scenario, he blocks it. But let's look at the other side of things. You could have gotten fouled. And now look, you're down by two and you're at the free throw line with a chance with three free throws to win in the national championship. Like, you have to make a smarter play than that. But honestly, I really, you know, Kelvin Sampson, I didn't think he managed that game well enough down the stretch. In my opinion, you can't lose a game like that, right? You just can't. And honestly, you know, looking at Florida throughout this year, even in the SEC, then there was one point in time they played Alabama. You know, y'all know I picked Alabama to win the title. So my brackets were jacked up. But, you know, they actually lasted a pretty long while. I think my bracket ended at 70% or 71%. Because I did have Houston in the title game in one of mine, and I had Florida in the national title game in my other one. But, you know, again, I, going back to what I was saying, you know, there was one point in time, even after Alabama played Florida, where I said, hey, man, these they slick look like the best team in the country. I am not going to lie. Like, they look like they could be the best team in the country. And a few people even said that, right? Like, so, you know, seeing them get to the national championship and winning, I'm not going to say I'm surprised about that, just because I saw, you know, the way they played it. They have been, you know, pretty a tough team to play. Even last year, they were a tough team to go up against, right? Tough matchup for anybody. In this game, Florida as a team, they did shoot 39% from the field. They shot 25% from three. So neither one of these teams shot well from the 3-point line. It's 25% for Florida, 24% from Houston. And honestly, that first half of this game, I mean, just some bad shot selection. I really was shocked at how many just contested, just unorthodox, like, 3-point attempts that were taken by both of these teams. I'm like, look, get the ball inside, right? Like, I really honestly don't know what either of these teams were doing, especially Houston. Like, they had every opportunity to run away with this game in the first half, and they just really didn't take advantage of it. And, you know, from the free throw line, this is obviously where the game can be decided, right? Let's look at the percentages for both of these teams. Florida, 81% from the free throw line. Houston, 64% from the free throw line. So, again, huge difference in a big factor in this game. Now, as far as, like, points in the paint, you know, they were pretty even across the board with everything else. As far as, like, turnover wise, Florida actually had 13 turnovers. So he into Houston's 9 turnovers. So out of Florida's 13 turnovers, excuse me, Houston was only able to get 9 points off of those turnovers. So you have some, again, wasted possessions, not taking advantage of your opportunities. And then when you have your largest lead is 12 points, like, you gotta bring that one home. You have to. But like I said, congratulations to the Gators, you know, putting on for the SEC. I know I didn't pick y'all, but y'all put on for the SEC, so I can't be mad about that. And honestly, really and truly, y'all, as long as Auburn or Duke didn't play in the national championship and didn't win the national championship, I was fine either way. I am not complaining at all. My wishes were met. All my Auburn fans out there, be salty, soak in it. I'm good with it. Same goes for Duke. I know some Duke fans out there too, so y'all can soak in it too. It'll be all right. I know you're tight right now, but it'll be okay. And look, you may say what you want to say about Alabama, but look, historically we were not known as a basketball school, but we have continued to build and build and build. And look, we will be back in the mix again, like we have been the last couple of years. So But again, congratulations to the UConn Huskies on the women's side. Congratulations to the Florida Gators on the men's side. Now let's talk about the NFL, y'all. Let's push forward here, because I have an issue with something that's going on in the NFL right now when it comes to the owners, right? And so the owners, if you didn't know, you're about to find out. I'm pretty sure you've heard about this, but they are 16 owners are banding together in an effort to get the tush push play banned from the NFL. Now, the owners plan to continue these discussions. They were tabled, but they're going to continue to have these discussions about the Eagles' tush push play after, you know, again, a proposal to have the league ban the play. Now, the Green Bay Packers, of course, the Packers wanted to be the crybabies out of the bunch. They actually were the ones who orchestrated or authored like this initial proposal, right? And from that, they actually earned the support of 16 NFL teams. Now, the NFL bylaws require a minimum of 24 votes to approve the change. And again, this is going to be revisited again, and that's going to happen next month in May when the owners meet for their spring meeting in Eagan, Minnesota. I don't agree with this, y'all. I think it's soft. I mean, don't give me this whole story about protecting the players and the player's safety. Obviously, that is 100% important, right? Player safety should be number one, right? We want to protect the players. We want to make sure everybody that steps on the field is protected. But the NFL is a dangerous game, right, in itself. There's no amount of, you know, changes and all of these adjustments that you can make to take that physicality out of football. The only other thing that you could do is make it touch football. And even then, grown men playing touch or flag football can find a way to still get injured. So there's no way to take that physicality out of the game. But they're really ruining the game, man. I mean, and to add on to this, the NFL's health and safety department had no data suggesting a single injury had occurred as a result of the Eagles or any other team using this tush push play. So where are the numbers to back up this? You come out and say that this is a dangerous play and you want to protect the players. Where is the data that is backing that this play is that dangerous and it's that unsafe? There is none. The fact of the matter is they don't like it because you can't stop it. If you don't like it, stop it. It's simple. It's plain and simple. You don't like it, find a way to stop it. It's been done. We've seen other teams attempt to do the tush push and have been stopped. The problem is the Eagles run it better than anybody. We saw the Bills, second closest to the Eagles. They were stopped on the play, right? Now, again, I just think that what they're really, really mad about is the Eagles running better than everybody. Their offensive line is stacked. And not to mention, you have a quarterback in Jalen Hurts who bench presses over 500 pounds. And then his legs are huge. So no matter what, he's going to fall forward. You can't stop that. I mean, here's my philosophy. A team has 10 yards to get a first down. If you didn't stop them the other 9 yards from them to get that close to be able to attempt the tush push, I don't want to hear a word. Because what happened to the other 3 plays? Most of the time that the Eagles are attempting the tush push, it's typically on 3rd or 4th down. They're not going out there on 1st down, on 1st and 10, doing the tush push, right, to gain 10 yards, 11 yards. They're not going out there on 2nd and 8, 2nd and 7 to do the tush push to pick up a 1st down. They are doing the tush push on the goal line. They're doing it on a 3rd and 1, a 4th and inches, Sometimes I've seen him do it from two or 3 yards out, really. And look, if you didn't stop them from getting that close the other 8-9 yards, what's there to complain about? Because if you do your job and you stop them, they won't have an opportunity to do the tush push. They're not going to tush push from 5 yards, 4 or 5 yards away. I can tell you that. So, look, y'all got to suck it up. I'm sorry. I don't think that this rule is going to pass, really and truly. I don't see it. I don't see this them banning it. I don't know. Maybe they will. I don't know. Maybe they will. But again, there's only 16 teams that are on board, so they need 24 votes. So there's 8 teams out there that still need, 8 owners, I should say, that are out there that still need to be convinced. But I am not a fan of this at all. I'm not on the side of like, oh, ban the tush push. Look, so anyway, let's move on, because there's some other stuff that happened on a positive side in the NFL when it comes to overtime. Now, let's talk about this, right? We all know how the current overtime rules were. First team to get the ball in overtime, if they score a touchdown, the game is over. If they don't, if they get a field goal, the other team has an opportunity to score a touchdown to win. Or if they get a field goal, they tie it up. They continue to go back and forth, right? If the clock runs out, it ends in a tie. So now let's talk about the new overtime rules. So new overtime rules, they're going to guarantee each team a possession in a 10-minute overtime. This is going to happen during regular season games. So I'm going to give you both the regular and the postseason format. So this rule is similar to the postseason format, which also does, again, guarantee both teams a possession. But the difference is that in the regular season, games can end in a tie. Right. So if 10 minutes, both teams are still are going to get the ball no matter what. But if they're scoring back and forth and it ends in a tie, like, so be it. It's going to end in a tie. And that's after 10 minutes. So in the postseason overtime rules, they're going to guarantee, again, both teams get possession and they're going to continue until a winner is determined, meaning there will be no ties. So it's just going to keep going. I don't think I see anything out about them adding additional. I guess they would add additional time for another 10-minute period if it's the postseason. So that's probably what will typically happen. They'll just have a second overtime of 10 minutes and then play that out. So I do like this. I do like the change. I like the fact that now you're giving both teams that opportunity, especially in the postseason. I think the postseason is really important. It would be cool if they did it in the regular season, because nobody likes a tie in the regular season, because a tie in the regular season is more of a loss than it is a win, to be honest with you. Because if it comes down to it, like, and between you and a team getting in the postseason, if you tie, that's more like a loss. You're not going to get the head-to-head over a team being compared to you if you have a tie. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it just depends on the scenario, but ties really don't necessarily work out in the team's favor. So, but I am looking forward to the day. Maybe there will be a day. I always thought that the NFL should adopt the college football overtime rule, where you put the ball maybe in the NFL you put it back a little further, but I know in college they put it on the 25, and after that first overtime, then you're putting it on the 2 yard line, and you're just going. I want to say, yeah, after the first overtime, I think they're putting it on the 2 yard line and just in going for a touchdown from the 2 yard line. So maybe in the NFL you do something like you put it on the 40, on the 40-yard line, you let both teams get a possession. If they're tied after that, then you maybe put it on, I don't know, the 5-yard line, the 5 or 10-yard line, who knows. But I do think that they should look into adopting the college model of overtime, because that overtime model is exciting. I mean, it gets your adrenaline running. As a fan, it's crazy. I mean, did y'all see the Georgia and Georgia Tech game last year? I mean, if you stayed up and watched that, you know exactly what I mean. Or if you've even ever seen, you know, I mean, there was a time a couple years back, Alabama and Auburn, they went to 4 overtimes, you know. But that Georgia and Georgia Tech game, which Georgia Tech should have won, but they screwed that up. But that Georgia Tech and Georgia game, I think it was 6 or 7 overtimes. So, yeah, college overtime is insane. So maybe the NFL will look into that. We'll see. But as far as it goes now, they are making some positive changes in the right direction. So with that, let's move on to NHL. You know, I don't talk about hockey a lot, but I had to talk about this because this was something that was huge. So I want to say congratulations to Alex Ovechkin for becoming the NHL's top career goal scorer. This comes after Ovechkin's 895th career goal, which did break a tie for the record with Wayne Gretzky, and that was this past Sunday. So shout out to Alex Ovechkin. Congratulations on a great accomplishment. I think that, you know, the sport of hockey is a very physical sport. It's a hard sport, and it's hard to score a goal. You know, I mean, for professionals, you know, that to go out there and be able to do what they do on ice, is you got to take your hat off to that. So I thought that's monumental, and that's huge. And the thing about it is he's 39 years old, and you know, he's still going, right? And I don't know who the oldest hockey player ever to play, you know. And I might just look that up before we get off. But to be able to do that and eclipse that record is awesome. So, you know, that's, you know, hats off to him. Oh, well, here we go. So pulled it up while I was thinking of it. So I don't know if y'all knew this, but fun fact, the oldest player to play in the NHL in terms of age, right? His name is Gordie Howe. I'm going to say Gordie Howe. So he was 52 years old, and he played in his final game in 1980. So he's actually known as Mr. Hockey. He played 26 seasons in the NHL, and he made his debut in 1946. 1946, and he ended in 1980. Wow. That is insane. So, hey, can Ovechkin go past that? Right? We'll see. But again, fun fact, that was y'all sports fact for today. Gordie Howe, 52 years old, was the oldest player to ever play. And Alex Ovechkin is 39 currently. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Look, all you can do is continue to add on to your broken record already. So we probably won't see that record broken for a very, 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 very long time. But let's shift gears, look at the NBA really quickly. So just wanted to just give you a quick rundown of the current standings in the Eastern and Western Conference. So right now you got Cleveland, who's at number one in the East. You got Boston after them at 2. The Knicks 3. Pacers are 4th. The Bucks are 5th. The Detroit Pistons are 6th. And then you got the Orlando Magic in the 7th seed. Then you got the Hawks, my Chicago Bulls, and the Miami Heat are going to be in the play-in. coming up next week, right? Coming up next week. I think it starts on Tuesday. Now, I'm not sure if the East or the West is going to start it off. What teams are going to kick it off yet, because they haven't actually released that. But I do know it's going to be kicking off. So, yeah, that will be taking place. And then on the Western side, you got OKC at 1, the Rockets at 2, Lakers are 3rd in the West, the Nuggets are 4th, the Clippers are 5th, the Grizzlies are 6th, the Warriors are 7th, the Minnesota Timberwolves are 8th, and then you got the Kings and the Mavericks. They're going to be in a play-in as well. So I just wanted to give you guys a snapshot of that. But man, the way that the OKC and Cleveland are playing, man, they look really good heading into the postseason. I mean, you got Boston, obviously. The Lakers are doing their thing. So we'll see. I think that this postseason, these playoffs will be exciting. I haven't been as excited to watch the NBA, I would say, during the regular season, but I know the postseason NBA is always exciting. So, I do think that we're going to get an exciting playoffs and looking forward to see who comes out on top. Watch out for my Bulls. Now, I'm not saying that. Now, listen, everybody calm down, because I know what you're thinking. You think I'm going to say the Bulls are going to, make a run to the finals. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, look at and watch how my Bulls are playing. Watch out for them, because the Bulls are a team that could, put some pressure on some people. They can put some pressure, especially the way Kobe White and Alex Giddey are playing. All right, I'm trying to tell y'all. I'm trying to tell you, if they get into the playoffs, we hadn't made it past the play-in in the last couple of years, but Kobe White is really coming to his own. He's putting up, he's having some crazy games. But yeah, watch out for the Bulls, man. They're a little sneaky. Could put some pressure on somebody. Did want to mention, I saw Luka. Luka did make his return to Dallas the other night, and he did put on a show. So I think he had shed some tears, because this is his first time, returning, I think, to Dallas since that trade happened that y'all are convinced that LeBron James didn't know about. I'm not buying it. But Luka just he made the Mavericks pay. I mean, 45 points is that was Luka's night. 45 points. I mean, he left Mark Cuban just sitting there courtside just looking. Well, he usually will sit behind the basket or off to the right or whatever. And he was just looking dumbfounded. He didn't know what to say. And we all knew that this was going to happen. We knew Luka was, when the time came and it was time for Luka to return, we knew what he was going to do. So I'm not surprised at all. So, yeah, Luka, he took his belt off. He put belt to you know what. Belt to you know what. So, but yeah, with that being said, that's all I have for y'all, man. I appreciate y'all. Oh, and for all my golf fans, the Masters, I know that kicked off yesterday. So for all my Masters fans, like in Augusta, if you're going out there, have a good time. If you're watching on TV, enjoy watching it. I won't really be tuning in. I'm not really a golf person, but VJ Singh, I always like VJ Singh because he had my name, y'all. Look, VJ Singh, I'm VJ, of course, And look, Tiger Woods is always going to be my guy, of course. So, I know a few golfers out there. So, I'm not honestly like downing, the sport at all. It's just never been my cup of tea. But, I do have to shout out my guy from the University of Alabama. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas is a golfer who, he's won multiple times. He's won a major. So, look, We had a few good golfers from University of Alabama that have done their thing. I mean, you got Nick Dunlap again. Like I said, Justin Thomas. You got Lee Hodges. So look, I know a little something. I know a little something. You know, I know about par and eagle and birdie. You know, I practice that because I do my little mini golf thing on the side. but no. Y'all enjoy the weekend. Have fun. Stay blessed, man. Be safe out here. And looking forward to jumping on again and talking some more sports with y'all. Appreciate the love, the support. Y'all keep rocking with me. We'll be back to chop it up again, y'all. So peace, blessings. I'm out.